I'm Ben.
I'm Zach, and welcome to
the Movie Vault.
Yes, welcome back. We have the second thing of Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, and once again we have our special guest. Who are you?
Anna.
You're Anna. Welcome again, Anna. Are you glad to be back?
Thank you. Yes, very glad. Very glad.
Okay.
And we are very glad to have you.
Thank too, you.
As well.
Wow.
As
never
the,
this nice to me.
The local Lord of the Ring. Well, we have to be nice to you because we're on camera.
Exactly.
So. We would. I don't think the fans would be. They wouldn't think a lot of us if we didn't treat you well. Don't worry, off camera, different story. But on camera, we'll be nice.
Now, so next podcast, yeah. You'll actually hold the record for the most on a row as a guest.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
it's not my dream.
Currently held by Jared at two.
Wow. So I'm so excited to be Jared out by that. Actually,
and third place is everyone else.
Yes. Wait, I'm actually pumped.
Yeah.
Guys, I don't know if they mentioned this last podcast, but I am their number one fan actually. I think I have the most listens.
I think you might have mentioned that last podcast, but we can rehash it again. I hope we like get an infographic under here that says Anna Hoover, number one fan.
Yes.
It's kind of like
more work for Zach.
If somebody got to be on, like if we were a huge podcast and somebody got to be on it, that was just a random person, that would be what this is like.
If we get famous, will we have Anna on again? Maybe.
Ooh, that's a good question.
I think we would for nostalgia's sake.
We might have Elijah Wood on.
Oh,
so.
My goodness. There was an interview where Elijah Wood, where he just cracks up because he gets asked the dumbest questions ever.
That's funny.
I feel like that's every actor of all time.
It has like 20 million views on YouTube. You should see it.
Okay, I'll look that up. But anyway, let's get right into this movie. So this is The Two Towers, the second Lord of the Rings movie, also the second Lord of the Rings book. And we're going to thank Ahmet Kozan, a user on IMDb, for our summary today. Sauron's forces increase, his allies grow, the Ringwraiths return in an even more frightening form. Saruman's army of Uruk-hai is ready to launch an assault against Aragorn and the people of Rohan. Yet the fellowship is broken and Boromir is dead. For the little hope that is left, Frodo and Sam march into Morador unprotected. Several new allies join with Aragorn, Gimli, Legolas, Pippin, and Merry, and they must defend Rohan and attack Isengard. Yet, while all this is going on, Sauron's troops mass toward Gondor, for the War of the Ring is about to begin.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right, first impressions when you saw it. Anna, what about you?
Like, when I saw it?
When you first saw it. Do you remember? You don't remember? How old were you?
I was, like, at least middle school, maybe younger.
Oh, well, I mean, I feel like you have a fairly good
really
memory by then.
Nah.
Okay.
I remember it was a lot more action than, like, the first one, obviously.
Okay.
And
is that
I
good?
Remember loving it. I don't know. Honestly, I don't remember if I watched, like, all of them at the same time over the course of a couple of days. I don't remember. It is good, though, yes. It was. Okay. It's good that it has more action, I think.
But what about, like, a rewatch? Did you get more out of it or no?
No, I think I was just, like, reminded, like, after not watching it for, like, probably a couple years since I watched it. There was, like, little parts that I remembered again. Like, I didn't think there was that many parts that showed, like, Pippin and Merry, but then I was like, oh, they're in it, like, a decent amount.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's about it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I kind of thought that it was like I'd never, like, forgotten anything about the movie. It was weird, like every part was just like, oh yeah, that happens and this happens, and it flows together really nicely. I think I like the things I noticed was like, okay, Gimli and Legolas play a bigger part in this movie.
Yeah.
Merry and Pippin, so some of the side characters get more of the spotlight. Like what I probably remember more is just like the fight of which, because this was like when I was younger watching this movie, this was like the first like major, you know, huge battle I saw in a movie. It was like cool,
too,
like
yeah.
super violent, and like, I mean, it really, in comparison, it's actually not all that violent, but it kind of is though. There's some heads that get chopped off and stuff, and of course it's always fun to see the Legolas versus Gimli battle.
So fun. I love
for
it so
killing the most orcs. And, you know, just defying the odds, and then that moment at the end. Those parts kind of stood out more, and this viewing, I think I was able to see some of the more subtle things a little bit more, or just remember them better. The interaction between Sam and Frodo and Smeagol was pretty good. Sam was a star of this movie, and I'm sure we'll get to all of that. But overall, it was like, oh, this is unsurprising, but it's still very, very good.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, I obviously like this one a little bit better. I think the action was a good, like, it was a good addition. There was a lot more action, but I think the part that I liked more was you're kind of getting into the actual character arcs of each of the, you know, characters rather than being introduced to them and going on to see, like, who they are, what's the situation, building the world. You're actually starting to get to see, like, oh, Aragorn has a love interest. You know, he's kind of conflicted about which love interest. Frodo is actually getting overtaken by the ring. Sam is trying to stop him from that. Gandalf kind of has a story arc, kind of, but I can't think of it. And, you know, even Merry and Pippin have their own story arc of, like, mm-hmm. standing up to the Ents. And so it's just kind of cool to see all these different story arcs take place. And that's kind of why I like movies in general, probably. So I think, yeah. And the battles were great. I think it was cool. I've seen enough of those horseback where all the horses are running at each other. I've seen enough of those to enjoy it. So, but okay. Yeah, it was nothing like, to me, it wasn't anything like, oh my goodness, the CGI is great. It's amazing. But I will say, I really, really do like Gollum in general, just because I find his story arc just very different and I can kind of see where they're going with it, even though I haven't finished it and I don't actually know what happened, so please don't spoil it. And I know I knew he was a hobbit coming into this, but like, I'm excited to kind of see if anything happens with him. But yeah, it's interesting just like to see each of the characters finally taking what they are, like who they are, and applying it into the situation. So I think that's why I enjoyed it more over. Like, there were a few parts, sorry to go on, but there were a few parts where like, people were like growing as characters, like Frodo or even Merry and Pippin, who I hated in the first one, where like they're finally like standing up, you know, he finally stands up to the Ent, to Treebeard, and it's like, oh yeah, okay, this, I mean, there's some serious things going on. Because my complaint with the first one was that it didn't seem like a serious melodrama pot. I mean, it was a melodrama, it didn't seem like a serious, I don't know, it didn't seem as grand, as epic as I thought it would be, as people had described. But this took the first one even further, in my opinion, and yeah, so it gave it a more gravitas, and it was kind of cool. So, yeah, I know that's such a different explanation of why I like it, but yeah, great. Good job, Peter Jackson. That's good.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite parts of this movie is how we get to explore the relationship between Frodo and Sam and Smeagol, mm-hmm. Because Frodo we can see as like he's the hero, but he also is like, clearly, he's not like a perfect hero. He's definitely a flawed hero. The power of the ring is overtaking him just like any other person it would. And there's sort of some, maybe this is something that I hadn't like thought into, but it kind of felt like there was some more like allegorical, perhaps. And I don't mean allegorical in like a, maybe it's not even the right word, because it's not necessarily like an allegory specifically to something, but it's sort of putting these characters as like reflections of how we would respond to certain situations, because you know, Frodo is the hero of the story, and yet he seems to be having a hard time, you know, resisting the temptation that the ring has, and if not for Sam a lot of the time, it probably would take advantage of him, but that's why Sam is there, to be level-headed. Sam obviously isn't, you know, being pulled as much by the ring. But then Frodo shows a lot of compassion to Smeagol throughout mm-hmm. the movie, more so than Sam does. But, and like, perhaps that's because... but perhaps that's because he understands what it's like
definitely.
to have the ring and what it's probably done to Smeagol, yeah. Even though, he is not thinking in the right state of mind all the time.
I think he also like it, I think it, yeah, it does like say this in the movie, like he's compassionate towards Smeagol because yeah, they've been in the same situation. And I think he says to Sam, he's like, I have to have hope that Smeagol isn't all bad, because then that means that I can come back.
Yeah,
and he's like, yeah,
I have the quote written down. He says, I have to believe he can come back. And mm-hmm. it's sort of just foreboding, because he's like, he knows that he's being yeah. put in the same spot.
Yeah. No, I agree. Is that selfish though? Is it? I don't know.
Is it? Should he be?
I think it's just the only hope he can cling to right now.
Okay, but so if he had no relation to Gollum, would he be sympathetic? I don't know. That's what I'm wondering. Or
speaking. Maybe not.
Okay, I'm just curious. Yeah,
he might not be. I mean, there definitely is a selfish aspect to this, but you also have to remember, like he's being put in a very unenviable situation mm-hmm. where like there's really nothing he did to, like, they're not, it's sort of a punishment in a way, almost, that he has to bear the ring.
Yeah.
But it's also like, it's a punishment that you'd be willing to take because of the pool of the ring. So it's like a weird, like, because it seems like everyone who interacts with the ring wants it. There's like this desire to, you know, be able to possess it. So, yeah, but there's this belief that he's the only person who will be able to, who's weak enough to bear the ring, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I think there was a couple lines at the end where Sam and Frodo were like, when the Wraith guy came, right?
On the Ring Wraith, or the Nazgul,
I think they call him. Whatever. And then after that guy left, he got shot by the arrow, and Sam had tackled him and to prevent him from putting on the ring. He says, I don't want to do, or I can't do this. He goes, I know, everything's wrong. Like, it seems like, that's obviously showing, like, he was forced into this. This is not, neither of them actually want to do it, but Sam's going to be there by his side. So I think that's a great story, and I agree with you. I think, like, their Smeagol and their triangle was the best part of the movie, in my opinion. Just because I think Sam saw in Frodo that Frodo was trying to look for hope in Smeagol's redemption so that he could be redeemed, obviously. And I think Sam saw that as, like, not selfish necessarily, but, like, he has a bias towards Smeagol. So it's not necessarily that Smeagol's bad. It's that Frodo can't be the person to trust, that Sam has to be the one to make sure that Frodo doesn't get into trouble.
Yeah, kind of blinded, yeah.
So, yeah, he's, like, yeah, he's definitely not looking at things clearly. So, yeah, I saw that as a pretty dynamic trio right there. And it's just odd because, like, I always looked at Gollum like, I had this Lord of the Rings Lego set growing up, and I saw Gollum, and I always thought he was like this one-off bad guy that they just fight in a cave and that's it. But he's a very complex character.
He is.
And I know someone, like I'm not gonna lie, I'm sorry again for going on, but there's like when he goes back and forth talking to himself, I'm not sorry. It's kind of, some parts are a little cringy, but I like, I sympathize with that. Like, he's like, because that's like an inner thought. And I know it's probably two different people that are actually inside of him. One of them is the one that desires the ring. The other one's actually him. But like, we can all relate to that on some level of like, we have this side that's pushing us to do something and we have the other side that's not. It's the internal conflict. And with Gollum, it's like literally such a divisive personality just because one of them is trying to actually find love and the other one's like just after the ring constantly. Mm-hmm. And that one obviously is more powerful and more dominant and more assertive. So it is a nice, cool thing to have that going on. And sorry again. Sorry. Smeagol was my favorite part. He really was. Just because there were like a few parts where like when they were like pulling him by the rope and Sam was like trying to like pull him and he's like, we can't take it. You know, he's like, we would die. And I actually like right away, I was like, oh my gosh, like I actually feel something for him because I'm not obsessed with animals like you, Anna. I don't love all these animals. But like Smeagol, I looked at him as an animal in the first movie, but then when he started to like feel pain and stuff, I didn't see that anymore. I was like, oh my gosh, like I hope this character doesn't get beaten and whipped like I've seen him get whipped. And that's what you do with the character that you want people. If you're writing a movie or a book, just make them get punished, and then you can make people like them.
Yeah.
So sorry.
No, it's okay. Yeah. We also mentioned I love bringing up the memes that were created from these movies, but the one where it's like Smeagol and Gollum fighting.
Yeah.
And he's like, you don't have any friends. No one likes you. That was my favorite thing growing up. Anyone know the app Dub Smash?
No. Yes. I don't.
Yes. Why?
Me and Ashley did that meme to Dub Smash. Oh my gosh. It was so funny. It's just a memory I have. Like, Ashley's my sister. Yeah, I just had to input that.
You did Dub Smash? Are you kidding me?
It was fun.
It's really embarrassing. I did Dub Smash. If that makes you feel
embarrassing
better.
For you too, then.
Yeah, it was really.
It was fun, guys. It was before TikTok.
Before we'd have to look into the Dub Smash lore.
No. Yeah.
No, it's funny.
It was funny.
Yeah, okay. I mean, don't you guys like Smeagol? I'm sorry, am I the only?
No,
one?
I do. No, I always like Smeagol.
Yeah, he's a good character.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. He's a well developed character. I agree with you. I think. Maybe I was re-realizing like his importance, not just like being there with Frodo and Sam. Like Frodo and Sam together are great, but like you need Smeagol to be like another.
And he was their guide. Like they wouldn't have made it without him. Yeah.
They had to They had to make a deal, and he wouldn't have been motivated without the ring. All of this is sort of like odd, like and that's sort of where like fate comes in.
Like he swears on the ring.
There's a lot of stuff about like fate and like you know, sort of a for, like it's not really like concretely identified.
Yeah.
But like the ring one, something like the ring sort of has like pool. Yeah. And like, and Gollum is sort of placed and you know, but it's like. But then Bilbo wasn't supposed to find the ring, so there's all this stuff that's kind of working together. Like, there is, like, a greater force that exists in this world that we just don't really know about too much.
I have a lore question. So, either of you. So, Gandalf goes to the highest point of the lowest mountain, right? And he's, like, there for a long time. And then he turns white because some force sent him back. And he was there for, what, 30,000 years? I did the math. And I think... Like, what was the, does it get explained why he gets sent back? Because he said, I was sent back for a reason or something like that.
No.
Okay, so
well, maybe
force sent him back.
Maybe, like, later in the movie. I don't really remember.
No, they didn't say anything in this movie.
No, yeah.
I think and it's just he was sent back to help. I don't know.
I was confused, and he just comes back.
If anybody knows, themovievaultpod@gmail.com.
Maybe there it's in go. The books or something.
Yeah, it could be.
If it is,
but it also may not be.
And what's the know. Significance of Gandalf the White compared to the Grey?
More power.
I mean, right? The Gandalf the White is like the only like sort of symbolic resurrection type.
Definitely,
figure. That's what I was thinking. He was like the Jesus of this movie,
but he's not because he's definitely not perfect.
No, like, I was reading something and it was like since like Tolkien has like Christian background or Catholic, I don't know, but there's like no actual like Christ one figure in this movie, and he didn't mean it to be. Apparently, he meant it not to be at all like allegorical to like. Christ, but obviously like it's just gonna happen. I don't know, but it's like Gandalf, Frodo, and then Aragorn are all like Christ like figures in their own
in their own way
because there's not like one
but they're all the center of the story because Aragorn's arc, which we haven't really touched on at all, is and I think honestly Aragorn's arc really has barely begun.
Yeah, it's mainly the third movie.
Yeah, so which will become very obvious to you, but we won't tell you why. But Aragorn is, you know, the heir to the throne of Gondor, so it's like hinted that he's a very important figure, and he takes on sort of more of a leadership role in this movie in terms of, but he still doesn't have like full control because we are introduced to Theoden, the king of Rohan, and Rohan is a different kingdom of humans aside from Gondor, and it's Saruman's first, like he's trying to attack, they're trying to get rid of the men, the human population. Did they explain why they're trying to get rid of him? Is it just
they just hate him?
They just hate him. It's just like war.
Sauron's trying to kill them?
No, Saruman. So Saruman is sort of positioned with Sauron, but also against him because I think he wants the ring too.
Probably.
I don't know because he's not exactly like aligned with.
No, he wants the ring to give to Sauron because the ring and Sauron are trying to get reconnected.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, he does.
I was saying Sauron wants to kill man. Like, they stated that at the beginning of the first movie. Yeah.
So that would be why Saruman would want to, too, if he's aligned with Sauron.
Yeah.
So that's Isengard. Isengard is Saruman. Mordor is Sauron, which why did they have to name them so similar names?
I know.
What, in,
Tolkien, what are you doing?
In the VeggieTales version, it's like Scary Man. I think, I don't know. I have to bring the VeggieTales version into it. It's pretty funny because it, like, actually, like, rips off the book, like, quite a bit.
The Lord of the Beans?
Yeah, Lord of the Beans. Oh, it's, like, a complete ripoff of the Lord of the Rings.
I've seen it.
It's funny. It's funny. VeggieTales is always a great pop culture reference show, surprisingly.
Yeah.
We're going to dive more into Rohan.
So we're in Rohan. So really, the groupings end up being, like, was Aragorn, Gimli, Legolas with the people of Rohan, and then Merry and Pippin get kidnapped and they end up with the Ents and Treebeard and Gandalf who reappears with the Ents.
First of all, the first time you meet Treebeard, there's like, oh, it's a tree. He says, I'm not a tree, but his name's Treebeard. I'm so confused.
He's got a tree beard, but he's an ant,
Yeah, but that's his name. It's
like, his name. It's fine. Your name is Zach. You're not a Zach. I don't know where I'm going with this. Yeah,
I just thought, I was like, well, he said, I'm not a tree. And then he says, but my name is Treebeard. I was like, okay.
It's just a name.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Okay. Yeah. No, he was cool. I thought it was cool that they were like trying to be like the neutral people. They were like the... like the people trying to be off the grid.
Like,
yeah.
They're like the Swiss. Pacifists. Yeah. They're the Swiss of the Middle Earth.
Yeah. Then, but then they go wild. Like,
yeah, because
they kill all those orcs. It was great. Like, I think my favorite battle scene.
Yeah. Because Sauron is like killing off the forest, right? Yeah. So there's like a
incentive. To be friends with these trees since they were saplings.
I mean, murder and killing and sending orcs to conquer lands, but deforestation. That's what pushes where it gets them over the edge.
Well, it's because they literally are. I mean, I know, it hits closer to home when you are not a tree, but something that's like a tree that is in the forest and gets killed by Sauron.
Yeah. It's so great.
Yeah, Merry and Pippin are trying to convince. Because they obviously are very powerful creatures. They're huge and they are we saw at the end how powerful they are. So getting them to be aligned with Aragorn and the rest of the Fellowship ended up being pretty important.
Yeah.
But really, Rohan is like the other part of the story, and that's where we're introduced to King Theoden, who is under sort of a spell of Sauron. And Saruman's henchman, Grima Wormtongue, is, you know, telling him what to do. He looks disgusting.
I know, and you can tell if they're good or bad based on their names, literally, which is super funny.
And how they look.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
He's like the palest yellow guy.
So disgusting.
Yeah. And, okay, and was he going after his own niece?
Okay, that's what I was gonna, like, yeah, I don't know. That's what I got from it, but, like...
Wait, who?
It's not his niece, though.
Or not niece, whatever.
It's just the girl. Like, he's not related to...
Oh, he's not related?
No.
No, okay. Wormtongue is not related. But he's going after... What, yeah. He's going after Eowyn, yeah.
Eowyn, yeah.
Which... What's the guy, the nephew? What's his name?
He starts with Eomer?
No, not Elrond. It's not Elrond. Eomer. Who passes away, correct? No.
Nope. No, the other one.
The other son. So his cousin.
So Theoden's son passed away, yes.
And then he is the nephew of the king.
All right. That's where I like sort of looked away for a second. And I was like, wait, who died? Did Theoden die? Like, I.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't look away. You'll get lost quickly.
Theoden's son dies off screen, correct? Were we introduced to him?
You see, yeah. It says that he like dies and then Arwen goes and like cries over him.
Okay.
We don't ever meet him when he's like living them.
Okay, but in the books, is he explored more? Maybe
I don't think so. I only remember Eomer.
I just thought I didn't know what the major characters of.
I think it was just like the significance that like Theoden under a spell is like, oh, my son died, and then he like gets out of it. He gets out of the spell, by the way, and
only because of Gandalf the White, who they were supposed to take the staff away.
That was so funny.
Is that in the book?
Yeah,
he acts
sure
like an
is.
Old man. He's like, oh,
he said you
so
wouldn't
funny.
Take away the walking stick of an old man, would you?
I'd have to check, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's in the book.
Yeah, but then afterward, he's like, yeah, he's all torn because his son died. He's like, you shouldn't have to bury.
Is Gandalf this sassy in the books?
Yeah, well, yeah, he is. I think. I might
he's
be
got
play-
some, yeah.
I was noticing
also,
like
it's, I think it's Ian McKellen adding.
Yeah, I think Venus. Ian McKellen definitely plays it up. I think the way they read off some of the lines. Now I actually need to reread the books, but
I know.
I think you just think about like how you would have thought they would have said them in the book, and then how the actors end up saying them. And sometimes you're like, wow, that's really profound. And sometimes you're like, huh, was that really like, huh, like because obviously. I feel like for the most part, though, my impression of how these characters like looked and everything was always like the movie always had an impression on that. Because even though I hadn't watched the movies before, I read the books. Like I still knew what like I still had seen pictures and stuff. Kind of knew like they might have even read books that had pictures of the characters
I think
on
mine
them.
Did, yeah.
So it wasn't like you know I didn't think. Yeah, because sometimes with books and movies, it's weird to see, like, you had an envision of what the character looked like, and then you see him on the screen, and you're like, that's not at all what I was thinking. Which is kind of why a criticism, probably, of movies, they, like, take away that sort of imaginative aspect. Now I'm on a tangent.
No, I agree with you. I wish I read... I'm starting to want to read the books now. Yeah. Of course, I'm at negative time
right
now
time for
in
that.
My life. Nope. But it's like, I would love to actually like dive deep into different characters, especially Gandalf.
Mm-hmm. I think Gandalf's it definitely cool. does, yeah, it explores Gandalf more.
And he talks as if all these big things happen that I don't know about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like, from the fates of something something in the battle of blah blah blah, and like with the power of something in the, I don't know, and he's like talking about all these extra things that aren't in the movie. I'm like, well, I kind of want to know what that is.
Yeah, the one thing about the books though that you'll find is that there's a lot more like poetry and song, and that's what's cut out of like it's like imagine reading like what is it, Beowulf. Have you ever read Beowulf? It's an old English, I don't know whether it's a fable or it's a story in old English, and it's just like in poetry form, the whole story. I had to read it in high school. and so that's kind of like, Tolkien's really influenced by that. So he basically like invented this whole world so that he could like do stuff like make poetry. He's really a nerd. So that's why like he made a story so he could have an excuse to do all of that stuff.
Hey, you can do it.
And you know, they speak, you know, this is a bilingual film, they speak a lot of Elvish in this.
Sure.
So and they don't always translate it.
No, not always. When it's convenient not to, they don't.
And like, I know, I'm sorry, you're trying to go through the plot. I just have a lot of questions. So this, like, I'm trying to figure out what distinguishes this from other fantasy types of other, you know, worlds and stuff like that. Obviously we said the world building, but there are so many other fantasy worlds I could say have great world building, and I'm trying to think like what does this, what's like
before this though.
I know it's like the first of its kind and it was big and the movie's obviously like engaging and the characters are great and the actors are great, but I'm trying to be like what is specifically good about the story of Lord of the Rings that distinguishes it, and I think there's something there, I just can't figure it out.
Do you have an opinion?
Sure, I do. I don't know. It's
such a vague question.
I honestly, like, I've never watched Game of Thrones, so I don't know that whole world. Because I know that's similar, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what people relate it to.
It's right? Very similar. Yeah. I'm seeing so many similarities.
So, not knowing that, I can't tell you what's different. This is it for me.
I mean, what you don't have any other fantasy worlds that you've invested your time in, I guess?
Give me some examples.
I mean, I don't.
Well, I mean, it's like Star Wars, right? Sure. Or like Star Wars, like completely different.
Those are galaxies, like, but there's one Middle Earth.
The thing about Star Wars is it is like a similar story, but it's way less cohesive because there was more than one. Yeah. Like there was George Lucas, but eventually there came to be so many people associated with it, and it became so huge. Like it's such a massive universe that like Tolkien had complete control over his work. Mm-hmm. He created the entire world. He's able to keep it consistent, and he built a lot of things like around it. And instead of trying to make it like, his goal definitely was not like to entertain. This was like a personal project. So most of the other books associated with the Lord of the Rings, which I don't think there's really that many aside from the Silmarillion and the Hobbit and maybe the Children of Húrin, which I read most of and was kind of boring. And there's some other, you know, assorted stories, but they're mostly like just built to as like a history of the world more so than they're like a narrative. So it just seems like there's a lot of depth to how the world is assembled, and there's just a lot of care. But I always come back to like, it seems like this is the best just because it is like the footprint. Like if you're, I've seen genres broken into like primitive, classical, revisionist, and parody. So I learned that in my movie class this semester. So I learned something. This would be the classical work, I think. I mean, there might be something else that's before it, but that would be primitive, right? I mean, there's no, because most of the other stuff is like not like built completely from scratch, right? It's like based on like things that actually happened, or like loose tales or like fables, instead of being like a built from scratch entire world.
I mean, it might be, I think the building from scratch might be classical, but don't you think like this type of fantasy realm has there's definitely things before Lord of the Rings that existed, where it's like knights and castles and orcs and elves and dwarves and everything.
Yeah, I mean, because where did he get all this stuff? It was from like the old English, like folklore. Yes, so he definitely drew a lot from.
Might be parody.
I don't think it's parody though, because it's not trying to make a
statement.
Maybe it's revisionist, perhaps.
Okay.
Like it's revising, like how you do the genre. But because I think parody would have much more of a like a self-awareness or like a humor related to like how goofy it is that like we're making our own language and doing all this stuff that's like if you, and that we're getting invested into this in the first place because it's not even real. So I don't think it really falls into parody. I'm trying to think of what is there like fantasy parody. I'm sure there is, but I just I can't think of anything like off the top of my head.
I don't know. I think the thing just overall for the Lord of the Rings and just like the whole Middle Earth world and Tolkien's world is just like it's yeah, like the how he's built like each group of people, like the men, the elves, the dwarves, the orcs and all that jazz, the wizards, like so thoroughly themselves. But then like in these movies specifically it's all about like the fellowship, you know, like they need every group of people, and at first they're like like Rohan is like nah, elves won't help us, and then the elves come, by the way, and just the fact that they joined together to fight for their Middle Earth, you know, even the Ents, they were like it's not our fight, but then they're like nah, we'll get into it because they they impacted us. So I think that's part of it for me that's like special. It's like they each have their own worlds within Middle Earth, but then they come together in their own way. Even like the little hobbits.
And it's such like it's so divided out. Like it's very like this is evil. We know exactly what evil is, and this is good. That's exactly what is good. It's not like there's any other than the Ents. There's no like in between. It's like. But there's a lot of I guess there are some politics, like Rohan being like, well, we got to defend ourselves by going to Helm's Deep, people not working with each other, the elves having to be like, okay, we're actually going to align with men now. We think it's like we did a long time ago, but we haven't in a while.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where Game of Thrones got its inspiration, because Game of Thrones is all about politics between kingdoms and clans and tribes and stuff, and in a land, Westeros, which is very similar to... whatever you call this. I don't know what you call this land. Like, I don't know what Middle the whole Earth. Land... Oh, the whole land's a little... Okay, Middle Earth. Yeah, sure. Sorry. But, yeah. But, I mean, I guess we did have a few new characters in this. What is it? Faramir?
Yeah, he's Boromir's brother.
Yeah.
And...
they both kind of suck.
Yep.
Because Faramir wants the ring. Correct?
Faramir, he, I mean, yeah, he wanted the ring, but he didn't really trust what Frodo was doing, so he kind of kept him captive until he could actually trust him.
But can you really blame him, though?
No, that's why I didn't blame him.
Yeah.
I don't think I would.
Because I was like, Boromir was like a little bit more like he knew what was going on.
Boromir tried to kill him.
He tried to kill him, yeah.
Faramir just kept him captive because he said, this guy has the ring, can I trust him? Is he actually going to dispose of it properly? Which is a fair thing.
No, he kept him so that he could use the ring for Gondor's sake.
Yeah, he did. Did he have a...
He did. I think that's noble, though.
He didn't want him to destroy the ring.
Yeah, but he wasn't being called to the ring. He was trying to do it out of logic. He wasn't doing it
because he had no, like... The defense for him is that he didn't, like, have any, like, background information, right? He, other than Boromir went to see these people and Boromir died, which is, like, how'd that happen? You know, he was like, well, I was hoping I would find out how Boromir died from somebody who was in his company, which Frodo was like, I don't know how that happened because I escaped from him trying to kill me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he was definitely he'll be a character we'll see more of through the next movies.
Interesting though. So another character we just talked about that's new is Theoden, who's the king, right? Mm-hmm. So apparently he wasn't possessed in the books, but he was just depressed, and Wormtongue was like influencing him.
That might have been something they changed to be more cinematic, right?
Maybe. Or to make him more redeemable.
Yeah, because it's like, how would you just be depressed and just be like, well, whatever, just do like all this
son dying,
terrible stuff and whatever, it's fine.
I mean,
fine.
I think there's truth to like...
Like, try to hit on my niece, that's cool.
Yeah, like, I don't think that Saruman was like actively possessing him the whole time, like he was at the end when, you know, Gandalf was drawing him out. So I think there's truth to like Wormtongue, whatever, would like... Can you know guide him when Saruman was like just kind of absent from his mind? If that makes, I don't know how this possession thing works with wizards, but it seemed like kind
of. There's a lot of stuff we don't know about how it works with the wizards.
Because
Gandalf and And Saruman are not the only wizards that exist.
No.
There's a brown one from The Hobbit. I forget what his name is.
Yeah. I like him.
He's fun. I think they, in The Hobbit movies, they really, they take more from the background stuff that...
Maybe.
Well, I've actually never watched The Hobbit, but from what I've heard, they...
What?
They take...
Next up, a movie.
They take, like, what was in the book... like reference a little bit, and they really expand upon it because they had to make it three movies, so in order to do that you have to, you know, add a little bit, so they explore some of that other, like how wizards work, like what the function, because there's like a council or something like that, and Saruman was like at Gandalf, the top, because we see in the first movie how much Gandalf respected Saruman, and now
he's the wisest of the wizards,
and so now it's like Gandalf has taken over Saruman's former position because he hasn't become corrupted.
And when he was glowing, I was like, that's totally Gandalf. I was like, that's not Saruman. There's no way it's Saruman.
I know.
I was like, they wouldn't be building it up if it wasn't.
It would have been funny if it was some random person you never met.
It was like, it's like Chris Rock.
Yeah. Hey, guys.
Yeah, no, I do think that you're right, though. I think you mentioned that there's a cohesiveness to the movie that makes it stand out above other fantasy films. Or worlds. So I think you're right. Yeah, Tolkien made this world. It's very, like, tight-knit. Everything is just, like, comes to an end and all the characters are accounted for. Whereas, obviously, Star Wars, Marvel, all these bigger world-building enterprises aren't as focused. So, yeah, I think that's part a big, big part of it. I'm reading some of these changes, though. I mean, it does seem like the books would just be very, very different in general. Like, the stories... would just be like that. Apparently the trees didn't even argue with Merry and Pippin in the books, and they just went with them. It was like a one page thing. It wasn't like a whole trying to convince them. It's just,
honestly don't remember that.
And it's like you really do have to change story arcs, like, to get to fit it into a film format. So I'm just curious. I would love to read the books and review these one day, but and then I know there's a character, was it Shelob that they say that they're not going to introduce to the third
one. Yeah, he was in the second book technically, but he's probably towards the end, so they
were... Is it Shelob or Shelob?
I think Shelob, but I don't know that I've ever heard it actually pronounced. But Shelob is referenced by Gollum at the end of the movie.
Yes.
Yeah. And I had the Lego set for that. That was pretty cool. Was that the Lego set you had? The Gollum giant one? Spider? Because Gollum was in that one, I think.
No, I had the one in the cave with the ring and Bilbo.
Oh, that might have been a Hobbit set.
Hobbit. It was a Hobbit set, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of fun.
I had that one, too.
Yeah.
We might have had that one, too, because we might have had two. I can't remember. Yeah. Lego Lord of the Rings was awesome. I had so from the first movie, I had the, like, when the Ringwraiths attacked them in that, like, old fort thing, I had that set, and it was cool. It, like, opened up. It's probably, like, destroyed somewhere now. Wish I would have, like, meticulously saved my Lego sets, but now they're all destroyed. So
no one I knew would.
I had a really cool, like, Star Wars, like jet with, like, Kit Fisto in it. It was, like, huge. Never probably gonna be built again because it's destroyed. Because at one point I was like, it'd be cool to take apart my sets and build stuff, which it's like, that's never gonna be cool because I'm never gonna build anything as good. Anyway. Okay. Just mad at my 10-year-old self or whatever.
No, but I'm looking right now, Ben. I think you're right. So in the book, Saruman doesn't necessarily say that he's Sauron's servant. But in the movies, they changed that.
Well, I don't think he even, like, says he's his servant. He's just like, yeah, we can't beat this guy.
Well, they depict him as he's... because the eye's at the top of the tower, and he's, like, literally trying to do the plans of Sauron.
But the eye's not at the top of his tower.
Oh. I got that wrong. But they depict him as trying to present himself outright as his servant, though.
I think that there are some references to him. It seeming like he, like, was trying to do that. So yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. And I think, like, in the book, he was just afraid of Sauron, so he did his will. But it wasn't like he was like.
I think that's accurate, though.
He was trying to make a play, I think, to be the guy in the end who had the ring. Okay. I think.
Interesting.
But he was probably, you know, not trying to go directly against Sauron because that wouldn't really advantage him too much.
Yeah.
And then the name of the two towers. Those are the two towers that are teaming up against men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Isengard and
Mordor.
Okay. Yeah, so that's kind of cool because then you hear the two towers and you know exactly what the plot is. I think it's a good title.
Yeah, it's good.
And the Fellowship of the Ring, you know exactly what it's about.
Right.
It's about the band of people. And I also appreciate that they're all separate this movie, that they didn't do the cheesy bring them all together right at the end.
Right at the end. No, like, that would be impossible because they're like moving in different directions. But yeah, it's good they didn't do that.
Yeah, I appreciate that they like went on all these different story arcs throughout the movie.
It was cool. Yeah.
Like five different plot A, B, C, D, E.
Yeah. Actually, I got so annoyed when Boromir took them further. I was like, they went all that way trying to get to Mordor and you just take them back to Osgiliath or whatever.
Added an hour.
Oh my gosh, I got so mad. I was I would be so mad. I would quit. No, I'm kidding. I mean, I hope I wouldn't quit.
You need a Samwise then.
Yeah, I would need a Samwise.
Mr. Frodo. Yeah.
I think the cutest part in the film is when they're walking through the woods after they get released from Boromir and he's like, do you think people will tell our story one day? Aww. Oh, Mr. Frodo, he was so brave, wasn't he? And then he's like, he wouldn't have been anything without his friend Sam. He's like, aw, I wasn't kidding. He's like, neither am I.
Samwise the brave.
Just breaks your heart.
Yeah, Samwise is the heart of the movie and the books and all of it. Because Frodo is too, honestly, I guess we might talk about this in the last film, but I feel like Frodo might be even more depressed in the books than he is in the movies. That could be wrong. He's pretty down a lot of the time. Yeah. You just see the wear of what he's doing. So without Sam, it's like, how would you spend time with a character who is just like sulking an entire, film, basically, even as the hero? It's why it's like, it's weird. It's like they're divided into two, kind of like Gollum is.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. He's legitimately trying to put on the ring and he knows he is. So without Sam, he actually needs Sam to tie his hands behind his back.
Yeah.
So it does take two people, two wills. But I am curious why Sam hasn't, and maybe there's a spoiler. Don't tell me if there's a spoiler. Sam gets tempted too, but don't tell me, just don't say anything. But, yeah. Anyway, I do think the character where they put characters together, they have a good balance of the trios that they have, because they have Legolas, Aragorn, and Gimli.
Aragorn.
That's a good trio. And you have the other trio.
Except that Aragorn almost dies, so he gets cut out from the trio for a hot second.
Yeah. Yeah, but throughout the movie, they're pretty fun together.
No, they super are.
Legolas is probably the best character.
He's so great.
Yeah.
He's so beautiful.
He's awesome. He can kill 10 orcs at one time, I swear. Good.
Yeah,
he's,
one time he literally has 4 arrows in his thing, right?
Yeah.
He goes,
oh, he's way better than Hawkeye. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, there's no debate. That actually was a big debate when
Really?
I don't know. It was just a thing. I don't know where or when people just ask Hawkeye or Legolas. You're Legolas, obviously.
I don't know. Hawkeye's got trick arrows.
That's not skill though. It's technology.
He does make them though. We learned that in the
Iron Man.
His series. What about Iron Man? We're talking about
Iron Man. That's tech.
You know one arc that they didn't have in this movie? The arc of needing insurance.
Ugh.
And nobody need. Well, they could have. Yeah, Helm's Deep could have had some insurance, possibly. Hopefully, ye old Hedman Anglin Agency would have been open in Middle Earth, and they could have
literally letters.
Wait, what's the?
Oh, the bird.
The
bird.
Carrier pigeon.
Yes. The bird from
the moth.
The moth. Yeah. Yeah. They so call the. Tap in Morse code 614-486-7300 on the moth and send it to Hedman Anglin Agency and tell them that Ben and Zach sent you, and then they'll send it back with their insurance rates and you can get your castle insurance. Yeah. And that's
it'll be worth the wait.
Yeah.
Ben and I will be in wizard costumes in the cutout.
That'd be pretty awesome.
All right.
I'll be Saruman, he'll be Gandalf.
Yeah.
That's accurate.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because Zach's the evil one.
Yep.
If you didn't catch on to that.
Yep.
Hey, I don't.
Please, someone make an edit of that right now.
As far as I know, I don't know who wins. So.
All right.
We'll see.
We'll find out.
I mean, I'm assuming they both die. To be honest.
What?
I'm assuming that they both die.
All right.
But yeah.
Well, Gandalf.
This is a perspective.
Died.
You gotta hold on to this.
Die again?
This is a perspective. Well, he came back. Maybe they didn't need him anymore. I don't know. It's possible, I guess.
I don't know. Ian McKellen always dies in his movies. I'm just expecting.
Okay, what else is Ian McKellen in? Because I feel like you guys have both
Magneto. He's an X-Men.
Oh, okay, I haven't watched X-Men. This is why.
Really? Any?
Oh,
he's in all
the next vault.
I've watched zero of the X-Men
movies.
That's
literally terrible. How do you call yourself a movie? I feel
like it's not that terrible.
It's literally so terrible.
I would be more embarrassed by other things I haven't seen.
No, you should be appalled at yourself.
Aside from.
You're so good.
I'm sure it's good. I'm sure it allowed the further Marvel Cinematic Universe to exist. So this movie made, it only cost $94 million to make.
Only that?
And, which is actually kind of a low number, I feel like. I mean, there's inflation, I guess. But, like, now they spend, like, $250 million on movies. Like, way more than, I mean, maybe that's just, like, the effects of graphic.
I wonder where that money could be going.
Graphic effects, which are not even good in Marvel. Like, they spend so much money on them, and they're not even, like, that good.
Okay, that's debatable.
No, some of them are actually not good. Like, okay, in, if you, like, watch Marvel movies, like, some of the, like...
You're just supposed to enjoy Marvel movies, okay?
Yeah, I know. But, like, this should be a better quality. I'm not saying all of them, because there are definitely some that are excellently done. Yeah. But it made $947 million. So, almost a billion. But, you know, this is pretty much, like, the closest you get to a sure bet. As long as you can pull off everything, like, because the story's already there. You just have to make sure that it fits into the movie form, which I guess isn't, like, you shouldn't take it for granted that it's easy to do that, because the people are always gonna say the books are better.
Almost harder though, because you have to cut so much out from the books.
True. Yeah, you have to know what's right to cut out, I guess. I feel like Tolkien makes that a little bit easy though, like. There's some stuff that's
all
like,
right, yeah. I guess when
no
you
Tom
take
Bombadil
her...
in the first movie. Didn't
oh my
even
gosh,
mention that.
Yes. Wait, I almost forgot about him.
He was the most confusing character in the books,
a
though.
A little bit.
Because in when they meet
Zach
him,
has no clue who we're talking about.
When they meet him, he's like, "Just call, sing my song, and I'll come." And
I
I'll
literally
help you.
Was so happy in the, like reading the book. Yeah.
But they they call him like once, but like
That's true.
What's his range? Like do they get out of range for Tom Bombadil? They can't like have him.
Maybe.
Cuz he's kind of like a Christ figure.
Sure, just lob him on there.
Because he's like all powerful. I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong. But now we're really confusing Zach.
Yep. Just don't worry about him.
Tom Bombadil is the Christ figure, all right?
Yep. He's the
But, so do you think they executed like making this into a movie well? That might be a dumb question.
Like I approve.
You approve. A lot of times book fans are really hard to please. But it's probably because like basing a movie off of a book is it's a little tacky sometimes.
Yeah, you're going up a hill anyway.
Theoretically it's like an easier route because you don't have to come up with the concept. So it doesn't always work.
You've got so much pressure.
They're sometimes very controversial too, like The Shining, which people love, but people who liked the book The Shining didn't like the movie, including Stephen King, who disowned it.
Oh, yikes.
So, but Tolkien wasn't alive. He sold the rights. I forget when, but he did.
Let's see.
There was also an animated Lord of the Rings, but I think they only made it to like the second movie before they ran out of money.
Oh.
That was like in the 80s.
I remember that.
Let's see. The all-time best computer generated, I think it had Gollum as number 3 characters.
Best CG characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gollum's great.
It's just interesting. Yes, Gollum.
He sold the rights in 1968.
Gollum has become a detestable slithering slug, and he has somewhat human origin. But he's actually a hobbit beneath that oily skin. He is possessed by the One Ring. He lurks in the shadows, following hobbits Frodo and Samwise on their journey to Mount Doom. Yeah, that's good. Entertainment Weekly. No, I mean, obviously, people have approved of it, like Anna, because, I mean, it almost made $1 billion, and people talk about it so much, and people get super obsessed with it. But it's not because of the movies; it's because of the books, and then the movies on top of that. The books are like trailers for the movies are like trailers for the books, don't you think?
Yeah, although Lord of the Rings often gets tossed around as being like like one of the best movies ever, like one of them or all three of them combined as like one of the best things ever made. Yeah. Like it's they rank really high on IMDb's list, which you can't take too seriously because that's like the general public, not the critical view of movies. But no, like people love them, like the movies. They love the movies, but they maybe love the books even more so. But it's like
probably, I feel like it's like fewer number.
Yeah, it's probably a smaller subset of people, just because books are not the popular median anymore, to view things anymore, or to have stories. We don't do oral storytelling too much either anymore.
Oh, it's so lame.
I think
people just sit down.
Next around. On the vault, oral story.
I mean, we have YouTube. That's type of it.
I mean, I guess that's true. Vlogs.
Is that a form?
Yeah.
It's just living their life.
That's though. Like our folk tales.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know.
All right.
But that's how things were passed down, just orally, back then. Like, that's all they did.
If technology goes to crap, we don't know anything.
I'm okay with that. I feel like all the great stories have been told.
All right. I mean,
there are new ones to come, but Bible. Nothing's new is under the sun. True. You know?
All stories are just retellings of stories that already exist, but everyone knows that, right?
Sure.
Wait, so are we just like living lives that have already existed? Is that the same?
You could say that.
There's have you ever seen two people or met a person that you're like, this person just like, the way they like talk and like move, it's like just so much like this other person I met. And it's like, you just know. And then you're just like, well, it might not even be their personalities exactly line up, but the way that they like act is just the same. So then you're like, well, there's only so many possible combinations. There's going to be like close similarities somewhere along the lines.
All right.
No, I haven't met anyone.
But I can think of a couple examples. I've never met anyone who's actually just like Zach.
What about my brother, Blake?
That's a little bit more expected, though.
Yeah, but isn't that someone, technically?
Yeah, technically that is someone. I guess so.
I've met a few people like you. Just a few, though.
Yeah.
Like three or four.
It's kind of a lot.
And I've met many like you.
No one's truly...
Name them.
Anna.
Go. Hey, that's me.
No one's truly an enigma.
Michael Scott says, but in fact, there are billions of people just like Kelly.
That's funny.
Yeah. No, I mean, before we finish, I do want to know, what are you guys' actual favorite characters in the movie?
Sam. And Legolas.
And Gollum, or Smeagol, and Aragorn. But maybe not because of this.
I liked Aragorn better in this, so... I like was rough on him in the first one. I wasn't like all for Aragorn in the first one, but this one makes him better.
Yeah.
For me personally.
And Gimli, I love Gimli. Now I sort of ragged him in the first one. I don't know why.
Oh my gosh, when Aragorn throws him, he's like, "Don't tell the elf." So good.
I love Gimli because it's not even like his people. His people are dead. He's fighting He's fighting selflessly. So it's kind of cool.
True.
Well, not all his people are dead. Just the ones in the cave. But yeah.
And Gimli is not. I guess we don't really know like a lot of his backstory necessarily, other than he's son of Gloin, but he's just there, he brings so much energy and just life to the group.
He has such like honor to him. He like can't back down. Like they're running like all these miles and he's like, "Oh, I'm more of a sprinter."
He falls off the horse. He's like,
"I meant to do that."
What did he say?
He's so funny. Wait, I love Gimli. Yeah.
What did he say? I forget.
He says that was on purpose or something.
Yeah.
That was intended or something like that. I don't know.
So even in Lord of the Rings, they are able to incorporate a little bit of humor into it.
Yeah.
It's kind of necessary, right?
Even thinking about I don't know what you guys would know. Like just the look of the film, like it's very dark.
It is.
You know?
True.
The color palette is very, very within a range.
Which part of that do you agree is probably like help with the CGI?
No, I thought about that. I did. And I thought it does go well with the movie because it's bleak circumstances and they're in like... Yeah.
Like the prettiest part was the Shire.
Yeah, they're in the Helm in Mordor. Like, it's like it's supposed to be the most terrible place in the world, you know?
Yeah, it is like a faded kind of color palette. A lot of greens, dark greens, and blacks, and yellows.
Yeah.
Like dead grass kind of things.
Fire. Yeah.
Dead grass for sure. Sam's not my favorite actually. Okay. I'll probably have to go with Legolas and then Gollum or Smeagol or whatever. I do like Legolas.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Sam's up there. He might be number three. I don't know. He is sweet. But sweet doesn't
he's
make the
like,
cut.
No, but he's just, like, real. Like, he's not sweet all the time.
Yeah, he actually gets very, like, annoyed a lot in this.
Yeah.
So, he shows some emotion.
Yeah.
And he starts to take more... He's more assertive in this movie, too, because he was a gardener. Like, he says that. He wasn't, like... He was, like, the person who obeyed orders. He wasn't, like, somebody who was, like, assertive. That's the thing with these hobbits is, like, they're... This is trial by fire. They have no experience with any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like... They're having to just learn as they go and just, like, take strong stands. I think that's why they're the most relatable to, like, us.
Yeah.
Like, even though there's technically other characters that are, like, human, but like,
we're not fighting in any wars. Yeah, we're not kings and, yeah.
Maybe some people are, but, like, I'm not, like, a heroic person.
I'm definitely more.
I'm not called upon in, at least yet in my life. Maybe that'll come. Probably not, but, like, in this way, though. And so it's like the classic, like, people who they don't seem like they bring a lot to the table, but they're called upon to do quite a bit. So and it's not even that they're, like, able to, it's the heart that they bring. Like, ultimately they need a lot of assistance to do, you know, what they are actually called to do, but it's their willingness to not give up.
Yeah, it's what we do with the time that we have been given. Right.
Facts.
Yes.
So maybe I'll close the podcast. Well, let me allow any final thoughts that you two have about this movie. There's no final.
I'm excited for the third one. I said that last time.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping, like, the third one will be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna read the books, and then I'll, like, fade after a couple months, but
probably.
I'm hoping I'll get there at least.
If you watch, well, you'll probably watch the theatrical version, but the extended edition is cool. Like, at some point it should be on your bucket list to watch the extended edition of at least the third one.
Okay.
I don't know, I've actually never seen the first or second ones, but I don't feel like I don't need to see 30 more minutes of Helm's Deep, because that's probably what it is mostly. And the first one, like, what are they adding into the first one? I don't know. Like, I feel like maybe it would be interesting.
I had a friend.
Not Tom Bombadil, though.
Not him. Shout out to Tom. Really got screwed over.
Poor Tom. I'll never get to meet him. I had a friend tell me that there's a character that, like, disappears in the third one. You don't know what happens to him unless you watch the extended edition. So... That's what he
That's
me.
Probably true. I just don't know. Yeah, I can't remember which character that is. I guess I've never seen the theatrical version, so I guess maybe I'll figure it out.
I've never seen the extended, so.
Really?
I don't think I own
all three extendeds.
I think I just watched the original.
Oh, really?
Like a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I just never watched them. But I don't own the originals. I only own the extendeds. It's just funny. But I'm on Amazon Prime watching the shorter ones.
And at first when we watched the first one, I was like, wait, this is the theatrical version? It's 3 hours? These must be the extended version. And then I forgot it's Lord of the Rings. Like, of course,
the extended's not too much longer, though.
It's like 20 minutes longer for the first movie, but it's like a significantly longer portion by the last movie. So, and it's quite a haul. I think it's 4 hours long.
Yeah, these actors are like, good job to them. Like, good job.
Yeah, they went through a lot to get this movie done. So I'm going to end with Sam's quote at the end of the movie.
Do it.
I know, it's all wrong. By rights, we shouldn't even be here, but we are. It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo, the ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you don't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad happened? But in the end, it's only a passing thing, this shadow. Even darkness must pass. A new day will come, and when the sun shines, it will shine out the clearer. Those were the stories that stayed with you, that meant something, even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. They kept going, because they were holding on to something. That there's something good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
And then the best quote, there's only one way to eat a brace of conies. And then the next best quote. This is Shadow Fox, the Lord of all the horses. Oh, or Shadow Fax. Whatever. What a, Shadow Fax? Like a fax machine? I'm so confused.
Stop, they didn't have fax machines.
And then the last one. Give it to us raw and wriggly. That's what Smeagol said. Oh, man.
Facts.
Sorry to end on those quotes instead of that.
No, that's great. That's great. But I that quote really, like, at the end of the movie, it hit me. Like, I know it's supposed to be, like, that's, you know, they do that in the movies to be, like, all emotional and whatever. But it did, actually. I was like, that sums up. That
quote stuck out.
Yeah.
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 So I'm sure it's in the book, and they probably, you know, took a theatrical. Yeah. I think that was one case where, like, maybe, I could be wrong, but maybe that quote stood out more because it was in a theatrical form. So... than it would have if you were just reading it on a page. Because you get to see the inflection, the emotion portrayed by the actor. So, good job, Sean Astin. And now, Sean, do you want to come close the vault? Sure, Mr. Ben.
Fly, you fools.